The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. Welcome along to the programme for this Tuesday. It's the 21st of July 2026, 5 minutes past nine, and it's another bumper 2 hours of The Greg Hughes Show here on your number one local radio station, Highland Radio. Lots coming up in the second hour. We've got Community Garda information where we'll bring you the very latest appeals and information from Garda Síochána, that and so much more besides. We're going to keep you across all the big issues of the day. The lines are open to you right now. We will be raising issues on this very show from people who were messaging us, texting us in over the course of the last 24 hours. That's exactly what we do here as well. You help form the content. So how do you get involved? Well, WhatsApps and texts come into us on 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000. You can send in your voice messages, by the way, if that suits you better for a myriad of reasons, to the WhatsApp number. You can also give us a call on 07491 25,000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And hello to you as well if you're listening to the overnight replay of the program on the radio or the podcast. Feel free to WhatsApp or email the show and we can pick up your comments and carry them into the next live show. You don't have to be listening live to be involved. It's 2026 for crying out loud. Right, the Irish Daily Mail. I think the government struck a balance here in relation to the e-scooters. It feels like we've talked about this a lot, but it's just been on the front of all the pages and we've been contacted by lots of people in relation to e-scooters, and we're just at that point in time whereby we had, you know, we had these rules and regs that were introduced which were very lackadaisical, really, 16 and over, and you know, after that it was a free-for-all. You could literally, you know, bob dual carriageways, just go anywhere you could, like you like on the scooter. That created a lot of problems. A lot of people use the e-scooters, particularly, I think, in our more urban areas and maybe even outside of Donegal, you know, your Dublins and your Galway and your Corks and Derry and Limerick and places like that. But still, a lot of people use them for very practical purposes. So an all-out ban, I think, really was being flown as a kite just to ease into what we are going to get, which I think is a bit more common sense. So 18s and over, helmets, high-vis. But obviously this scrutiny now is on cyclists. Is this the time to look at cyclists as well? And, you know, get everyone on something of a level playing field on the roads. And that's the focus of the Irish Daily Mail this morning, their front page story. The government is considering forcing cyclists to put registration plates on bicycles and wear high-visibility vests and helmet as part of a major road safety clampdown. And even to this day and age, it might surprise people that neither high-vis or helmets are obligatory on bikes. I think a lot of people presume they are, but they aren't. And they weren't on scooters either. The measures are being considered alongside a suite of new restrictions on e-scooters, which will be hit with a ban for under-18s next month, along with a requirement for riders to wear high-vis vests, as I mentioned, and a helmet. Plans will be brought to Cabinet next week on e-scooters, which will see legislation tabled that will treat e-scooters as mechanically propelled vehicles by the end of 2026. The new legislation will also see the sale of e-scooters to minors and the sale of scooters that do not meet the legal requirements for use on public roads being banned, which is a bit of a problem for the stockists of electric toy scooters that, you know, parents might get their children to use around the yard. They're going to be banned as well. Again, it's difficult because it's going to hit some people, isn't it? Road Safety Minister Sean Canney told the media that e-scooters would be treated like, and I'll just go to page six, they would be treated like mopeds. But multiple government spokespeople could not clarify last night how this licensing would work or what would be required in order to obtain a license. Junior Transport Minister Mr. Canney told the Today FM, actually, that an extension of the same measures around registration plates, helmets and high-vis vests to cyclists is also being considered. Like, it makes sense if scooters then are being used for nefarious reasons by people peddling drugs or whatever it might be. If you connect an e-scooter to an individual, I think that makes sense, you know, if that is the problem. But it all has to be enforced, of course. We've invited the minister on the programme and he normally does accommodate us, so we'll We'll see. In fact, he is coming on the show a little later on. So we'll tease some of that stuff out. So if you have any questions in relation to e-scooters, their use, what would be required, we should have more information. The papers there are sort of doing a bit of guesswork, but we'll get you the answers. So the Minister, Minister Canny, is coming on. Unfortunately, you're going to see petrol and diesel and home heating all go up again, because America has got itself in a very difficult situation. It's back in conflict, pretty much full-on conflict with Iran. And the problem for Donald Trump et al. Is there's no way out of it. I can't see any way that America can get out of it. Why they got into it, I simply don't know. It was about a threat of a nuclear weapon that they didn't have. And now they've, and it sounds like Iraq, except this is more difficult to get out of because the Iranians have control of the Strait of Hormuz. And if anyone tells you any different, they're in fantasy land, because with a 600 euro drone, they can take out a multi-billion euro oil tanker. And whilst they have that capability, and they will always have that capability, they hold all the cards. You might remember Trump talking about Zelensky and the cards. Well, the Iranians hold all the cards, and he can bomb them and he can do whatever he likes, but he's only got two options: A, retreat with his tail between his legs, or B, putting ground troops, which he can't do, especially coming up to the midterms. So he's got himself in this pickle. No oil is going to be coming through. He can do nothing about it. The Iranian resolve is only growing, and there's really no out for the United States. Can you imagine a country that he was? And I'm not backing Iran, by the way. I'm literally, this is just a for the purpose of this conversation, an independent observation of what's going on. All he's doing is strengthening the resolve of Iran. He can start bombing their bridges, and he can start bombing the power, and they are a people that will just make them even more resilient, and it's effectively a recruitment campaign for the ne'er-do-wells over there. And that's the he is no way out of it, unless, I mean, he offered to lift sanctions for them. He offered to allow them to trade oil. He offered to release money, billions upon billions of dollars that had been seized as part of sanctions. And still, the Iranians decided, no, we don't want to give up the Strait of Hormuz, so we'll start attacking ships, and here we are. And what that means, it's going to affect us. You know, the politics in the United States is a matter for them, but this impacts us. And there are fears that petrol and diesel prices will shoot up again after the latest jump in crude oil costs. Crude oil has risen above $90 a barrel for the first time in nearly 6 weeks, as investors lose hope for an effective peace deal between the US and Iran. Experts warned that this new spike in the cost of crude would be reflected in pump prices in the coming days. And you can see already there are some service stations that are very tuned in to the retail price of oil, and it's already going up there. Now, the real solution to this is, and it's just a waiting game, and the way politics work, Trump doesn't have the time for this. But alternative fuel lines and shipping infrastructure will be put in place, be it overland or through the sea. Other nations will pick up the slack in terms of oil and find ways of getting it out without using the Strait of Hormuz. How long that takes, I don't know. But whilst we are so reliant on that strait, the Iranians hold the cards. There's just no doubt about that. The government's long overdue report on the export of alumina to Russia from the Ochnish plant in Limerick is not now expected to be published before it's sent to the European Commission. This is reported in the Irish Times. The document is expected to be formally concluded later this week or early next week and sent to Brussels. However, despite restrictions expectations among opposition politicians that it will be published, it is understood the government will not do so. The Department of Enterprise is expected to publish a statement outlining the findings. So obviously there's pressure not to be part of the Russian raw machine, but there's an awful lot of people employed in that plant in Limerick, so they're going to have to sort that out one way or another. Another changing of the guard in Britain. Taoiseach Micheál Martin has congratulated Andy Burnham on becoming UK Prime Minister. He said Mr. Burnham was a great champion of deeper links between Ireland and Britain. In a statement, Fianna Fáil leader Mr. Martin added, "I look forward to working with him to further strengthen the partnership and friendship between our two countries." Mr. Burnham, he's an impressive speaker. He's from the north of the country, so it feels like a little bit of decentralisation. He's hamstrung, though, obviously, with the economy and the manifesto. He's insisting on he's going to follow through on the Labour manifesto. But he talks the talk, and I think the British public are going to give him a little bit of space to see if he can walk the walk. But as I say, what can he do in the period of time that he has with the financial constraints that that country has as well? But we'll see. We'll watch on. He seems to have a better understanding of Northern Ireland, for an example, you know, in terms of its infrastructure, the rail infrastructure, for an example. So he has got an interest, and he speaks, albeit obviously, there are a lot of people that wish he wasn't speaking about Northern Ireland in the context that he can. But you also have to think of the day-to-day until such time as that scenario changed. And the media love this story about this damage to a window in Ryanair where a passenger was nearly sucked out. And considering the amount of planes that Ryanair and the amount of people that they carry, the planes they fly and people they carry, one gnarly incident, really, I'm surprised at the amount of questions Ryanair got asked about it. A part of the engine appears to have detached, smashed a window, and a person found himself, which would be horrendous, almost sucked out. But he was fine and was able to walk off the plane. Ryanair boss Michael O'Leary said foreign object damage to a Ryanair plane's engine was the likely cause of a terrifying incident where a passenger was nearly sucked out of a window on the aircraft. But they ended up being okay, as it turns out. Niamh McCormick is Legal and Public Affairs Manager with the Irish Penal Reform Trust. Thanks for joining us, Niamh.
Thanks for having me.
Now, the Trust has launched a major new report examining how Ireland's bail system operates in practice and why pre-trial detention continues to rise, and this despite a legal presumption in favour of bail. So for us people who don't have the legal knowledge, what does this all mean in practice, Niamh, in layman's terms?
Well, I suppose in layman's terms, you know, everyone would be familiar with the idea of bail being something that you get you know, before trial, where if you're granted bail, you walk out of court. And if you're not granted bail, you're put into remand custody in prison. And so what our research has found, that what's happening is a lot of people who really should not be in prison are ending up in prison because they can't be given bail because they are, let's say, homeless, or because they're experiencing acute mental illness and there's no treatment for them in the community. And so these people are ending up in the remand system, and they're not, I suppose, coming out into the services that they need. They're coming back out into the same situation that they were in and then going back in through remand.
Mm. And, of course, this is going to put extra pressure on our already overcrowded prisons, naturally.
Yeah, I mean, the prison overcrowding crisis at the moment is just spiralling out of control. Today, we're nearly at another record of 6,000 people in prison for a prison system that's designed for just over 4,000. So, you know, of that amount, about 20% are people in remand custody. So that's a really high number of people in custody in remand. And if we had that, you know, those alternatives to detention so that people didn't have to go in to prison unnecessarily, it would, you know, really go towards resolving that overnight.
I would have thought, in my naivety, that, you know, you were least likely to get bail if it meant that, you know, the judicial system was inclined to think that you may end up with a custodial sentence, such as the severity of the crime you might have or may not have committed, actually, because, of course, you haven't actually been convicted of anything at that point. But the majority of people who are remanded on bail end up without a custodial sentence at all.
Yeah, so the figures that we have in the report that I think are really, really important to kind of strike to the heart of this is that last year in 2025, 74% of people who left prison from remand custody did not receive a custodial sentence. So, I mean, to us, that indicates something very seriously wrong with a system where you have people who are, you know, either not being found guilty or been convicted of an offence so minor that you can get a custodial sentence, spending time in prison and then coming out and, you know, going back out into this community, having been in prison unnecessarily.
people will read court cases and will see often an objection to bail, and they might see Section 2 being quoted in that objection, and can often be successful, of course. But the trust is concerned about the overuse or misuse of Section 2 objections. Can you explain that a little bit for us?
Yeah, so the Section 2 objection came about after some of your listeners might remember the 1996 referendum on bail, which was an amendment to the Constitution to allow for bail to be denied in very, very specific circumstances where there's a likelihood that a person would commit a serious offence if they were released on bail. And that's a very, very narrow exception. And it was put into law. And essentially what the rule is supposed to be is that you have to have been charged with a very serious offence, for example, murder, rape, serious offences. And you also it has to be apprehended that the likelihood that you would go out and also commit a serious offence. So that's the really, really high threshold. And what we're seeing before the courts is that there's the lines, I suppose, are kind of being blurred about when Section 2 can be applied, when it shouldn't be applied. And because you have Garda court presenters who are not legally trained in courtrooms, making bail applications or opposing bail applications, sometimes they're raising Section 2 objections inappropriately in cases where they actually shouldn't really apply at all. So that was a real trend that we noticed in the research.
Yeah, I mean, it might suit, and it's a bit of a mask for the failings in that, you know, maybe the general public feel that if someone has been arrested and has come before the courts, even before a trial, whether, you know, they deserve everything they get. But that's not really how justice should work. So whilst these people who perhaps need additional supports or even housing, they're being put into jail to eventually probably not end up in jail for whatever crime they did or didn't commit, and no one really to advocate for them, it kind of means that this could be a space. Now, I know obviously we're doing that right now, and the trust is through this research, but where is the push for things to improve for these group of people? Who's advocating for them outside of the likes of the Irish Penal Reform Trust? You know, and what that does, you could argue, is it gives the state a pass, perhaps in investing and spending in areas to give these people a better chance of what the whole legal system should be, rehabilitation.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of advocacy, you know, you've hit the nail on the head there. I think we're talking about some of the most vulnerable people and some of the most marginalised people in society who are, you know, finding themselves behind prison doors, particularly, people who are experiencing active psychosis, who have really, really serious mental health issues and are being arrested for minor public order offences. With the assumption that if they went into prison that they'd get the help that they need, but it's so overcrowded that that's just not the case, and you know they're being left in prisons in active psychosis because they can't get the treatment that they need. And yeah, who's there to advocate for them? I mean, the Irish Prison Service has spoken out, you know, a lot about the overcrowding crisis. The Inspector of Prisons has, you know, very recently said, described it as being a national disgrace. You know, in the past has also described, in particular, the remand system in Ireland being used basically as a social safety net to catch all of the problems that none of the other systems are actually resolving, particularly the health system and the mental health system. And so, you know, these issues aren't, unfortunately, a surprise to people who are in the system, but they are really, really serious issues that need to be addressed and need more attention now.
Yeah, and I'm getting some comments in, you know, and people I think are conflating this to some extent, and maybe it's justified, you know, with repeat offenders and you know, rotating doors at prisons and that type of stuff. But what lies within here is something that people need to be careful of. We're having a conversation here about, you know, proof that someone has done something correct, that process is followed. A person's right to liberty, a person's right to a fair trial, all things really that, you know, those who might disregard this as a nothing and they deserve it, all things that people actually should really quite value.
Yeah, it's one of the core aspects of our democracy is, you know, the right to liberty and the right to a fair trial, you know. So I think, you know, and you know, I do speak to members of the public, and, you know, we do have events where we run kind of information sessions. And by and large, the, you know, the Irish Republic, the Irish public understand the very nature of the point of the criminal justice system, which is rehabilitation. And people understand that you can't have rehabilitation if you're in an overcrowded cell, in squalor and in really poor conditions. Mm. But also, I think we understand that the right to a fair trial and the right to the presumption of innocence and the right to liberty are core values and democratic values that this state is built upon. And I don't think, you know, it's necessarily fair to characterise the general public as people who would just say, you know, lock them up and throw away the key. I think there is a, you know, there is a percentage of people out there who might think that, but I think the vast majority of your listeners probably today can understand that, you know, that's not how it works.
Mm. Okay, no, I get that. Listen, thank you very much, Niamh. I appreciate your time. Niamh McCormick, Legal and Public Affairs Manager with the Irish Penal Reform Trust. Okay, so as you would know, there's been quite a lot of conversations about e-scooters and their usage in recent weeks, and there was some speculation, and indeed I think the Taoiseach himself was minded to consider an all-out ban. It was discussed yesterday. There are changes incoming, but it's not an all-out ban. Minister Sean Canning, Minister of State at the Department of Transport, is with me now. Thanks so much, Minister, for taking your time to speak to us. I'm sure you're receiving lots of requests this morning. Good morning, Sean. Are you there? You're muted in case you are attempting to speak to me. No, let me just see if we can resolve that situation in a moment. The Minister will be joining us. If you've got something to say in relation to this, of course, 086 60 25,000.
Hello.
Sean, you're there now. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. Right, so what has been agreed yesterday, Sean?
First of all, we had a long discussion. We had the Garda Commissioner, we had Jim O'Callaghan, Taoiseach Conas, the Attorney General, and I, to discuss an options paper which I had prepared with my department in relation to e-scooters and what we might do. We came down in favour of doing something very immediate, which is to bring in regulation, which I will hope to bring in early August, and it is to make helmets and high-vis vests mandatory for e-scooters, and also to raise the age by which people can drive them from 16 to 18 years of age. Mm-hmm. We further agreed that I would bring forward legislation in early September, the first week back into Dáil, where we will change the designation or the definition of an e-scooter and make it a mechanically propelled vehicle, which in effect means it will need to be registered. It will have a license plate on it, and we will then know who's selling them, who's buying them, and we will have people who will be responsible for them.
I presume the Garda Commissioner will welcome that, to be able to associate a vehicle, in inverted commas, with a person, because I understand one of their concerns was their usage, you know, in illegal activity, for an example. I presume that would be part of the plan to address that, amongst other things.
Absolutely. Well, the first thing, there's the visible thing of they've been seeing, if they don't have a high-vis vest or the driver doesn't have a helmet, that the e-scooter can be actually confiscated. I will also be increasing the fines in relation to the recovery of the e-scooter backed by the person, hopefully to double them fines. What I've been saying is that right now, the Guard, they need as much clarity as they can. They need as much assistance. And I think there's also there is a perception that there is no enforcement at the moment. But just to say, at the moment, up to now, in 2026, 1,412 e-scooters have been seized. And also 793 prosecutions have been taken place this year so far in relation to e-scooters. Mm. So enforcement is happening. Everybody would like to see more of it, and people can see examples of e-scooters around their own towns, villages. It's not a city phenomena. It's every place at the moment.
Why did you settle on 18, Minister? Because obviously, say, for instance, 16, we would see in rural Ireland, perhaps in urban Ireland as well. You know, a 16-year-old can drive a three-ton tractor. And I'm not sure of the sort of the age demographic of the children. We need to be very concerned about who are presenting with head injuries, etc. But why 18 and not 16?
I think what we have, when we look at the reports we're getting back in from CHI, from Temple Street, from the hospital there, we've had a 50% increase in the number of children who are being admitted with serious brain injuries. We have seen that there are 5 people on life support at the moment in Temple Street. I'm saying to people, these are children. These are children who should be out enjoying fine weather. They're on their summer holidays. They should not be in on life support. Mm. So it is a very serious situation. And what we're trying to do is to make it easier for the Gardaí, put more clarity there. And also we feel that because the age of 16, you know, you talk about they can drive a tractor, but if the brake and a tractor, they have all the protection around them. If somebody brakes, put on a brake on these e-scooters, that just go right out over the handlebars, and that's what happens. Okay. So we have to make sure that whoever's using them will actually have that responsibility to do that.
You say they'll be treated like motor-propelled vehicles. What is the situation in terms of, you know, a tax, road tax or insurance for that matter, or is it just in terms of them being registered as a vehicle with a number plate or whatever you decide on?
The most important thing is that they are registered and that we know who sold them and we also know who bought them. So that if it's a parent that buys one and it's a child that has the collision up on it, well, then the parent is responsible for that.
Okay.
Likewise, we will also be able to trace where they were bought. And at the moment, you can buy them online. You can buy them any place. There is no documentation to be filled out. You can buy them at speeds that really exceed the speed limits that we have here for them. And I think it's important that retailers take responsibility and also that parents take responsibility here as well.
Is now an opportune time, Minister, for a similar regulation for cyclists? Because we did see scooters being treated the same as push bikes, effectively. And there are electric bikes as well, and I'm sure they can be used and misused. But just to level the playing field for other road users, is now the time to have some sort of a register system for push or electric bikes or both?
Well, I would say this. Look, the data we get back from the Department of Health is in relation to e-scooters and the brain damage that is being caused through collisions. This is something that has become so very common that you have serious repercussions.
Yes, I know, Minister, but sorry to cut across
but we
see a lot of light jumping and frustration from motorists directed towards cyclists. I'm just wondering, of course, the public health is the driving factor for these changes. I'm just wondering, is this an opportunity while we have the legislative book open to maybe also address that other concern that many people have out there?
Yeah. Well, you've mentioned things like jumping red lights and whatever. That is the problem. That is a responsibility of enforcement. Nobody should be jumping a red light, be it walking, be it cycling, be it on an e-scooter or in a car. We see people are doing different things which are not right. I also don't want to end up in a situation where we have a row going on between cyclists and motorists. Mm. We have limited space on lots of our roads. The ideal thing is that we would have a cycle lane, we would have an e-scooter lane, we would have a car lane. But in most of our towns and villages, they were designed for the horse and cart. And the width of them is a lot less than we can afford all of these luxuries. But I think that there is also a common, I suppose, responsibility everybody has towards themselves and towards everybody else that's using the roads. And I think that's something that we have to work on. I would also say that in terms of the e-scooters, we have an education programme which we're going to implement. We have it there already, but to reinforce it with parents, with schools, with TY students, all of that, so that they are aware of the dangers. And when you get we're waiting for a full report from the Department of Health in relation to the the health issues for adults as well, and the injuries there. And that will be informing future measures we will take. Mm-hmm. Right now, the decision we made yesterday is to implement an immediate change, and also to bring in legislation which we can get in with another bill and get it through the Dáil in September, which will, I think, give the Gardaí that certainty and clarity that they need when they're in, when they're doing their duties. I also think that, and this is an agreement we have reached as well, is that we will be bringing in legislation to help protect the Gardaí in the pursuit of their duties. And if they would not feel under threat that they're going to be prosecuted if they drive at speed to try and apprehend somebody. Mm. Gardaí also probably needs some training in relation to the pursuit on e-scooters. It's something that has grown over the last 2 or 3 years. It has grown substantially, and it's just something we have to deal with. And when you look at what's happening across Europe, different countries are doing different things, but Spain are doing something similar to what we're doing. It's registration and licensing and all of that. In London, they are banning them from the private person cannot use them, but you could actually hire them at one of these sites where you can hire them out. Brussels is doing the exact opposite. So everybody's trying to grapple with this new problem which we have. Yeah. But at the end of the day, for government and for us, it's a matter of trying to stem the tide in relation to injuries and serious injuries.
And finally, retailers will be listening to us, you know, or parents with, you know, toy e-scooters, effectively, that they might buy for their children, you know, ones that would never end up on the road, so to speak. You know the type, I'm sure, Minister, that I'm talking of. This legislation doesn't extend to them, does it? Or perhaps it does?
Well, in the drafting of the legislation, we will be looking at that, because I do believe, and I've seen it myself, even last Sunday when I was up for the hurling match, I saw a child, I'd say maybe two, skating along, two and a half, maybe three, skating along on the footpath with their little bike in the crowd at the match. And I was saying, my God, and the parents were with them. I was saying, that doesn't look safe to me. Okay. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but it doesn't look right to me. So we will be looking at that and see what we can do there. And also for the retailers, I would say, you know, I have seen myself e-scooters, which can go up to 30 kilometres per hour, being sold in baby shops. Okay. It doesn't make sense that that commodity would be in the same place as a pram or a buggy and children's. So that's why with the registration of it, the responsibility will be resting with those selling them and those buying them. And also, the regulation will mean that people who already have the existing scooters, they will have to be registered as well retrospectively.
All right, thanks for your time, Minister. That's Minister Sean Canny there, Minister of State with responsibility at the Department of Transport. Hope I covered every question that you might have had there. Dylan is listening. This is what he had to say.
Hi, Greg. When the minister comes on to talk about the e-scooters and how they're going to enforce it, ask them if they're going to introduce cameras which recognise registration plates and can also be used for facial recognition, as has been done in the UK.
Yeah, OK. I didn't quite get to that. I mean, we don't really have that for our roads at this point. And if you're encouraging people to wear helmets and, in fact, enforcing them to wear helmets, I'm not sure what camera recognition software might do in terms of facial recognition. But there you have it. A caller says, how many are not granted bail or repeat offenders for similar offences? Well, like 75% of those who are not granted bail end up with no custodial sentence at all. So they're actually just locked up whilst they're waiting to go and find out if they're going to be found guilty or not. So there's different cohorts of people here, and that's what I was trying to separate out with our guest, but she sort of implied that the public understand that and don't need that separated out, but there you go. There is a complete lack of meaningful enforcement on our roads, says a listener. Probably half of all cars have illegal darkened license plates that can't be easily read, and they're completely ignored by authorities. Where are the fines and seizures for this? Yet, they expect an e-scooter to be registered with a license plate. Another, what's the ideas of these big wide footpaths that's happening now everywhere? New roadworks, crazy footpaths that you could drive a car on. Well, that for your walking, your cycling, your e-scooters. Another, a child at 16, Greg, can drive a tractor in a public place, a big brute of a four-wheel drive. I don't know what the maximum speed is compared to that of a little e-scooter. It's difficult to fathom. But we've got five children on life support at the moment in hospital because they came off e-scooters. We don't, per se, because there was an incident with a tractor. You know, and that's what they're basing this on. You know, and as the minister says, and you know what, he did paint quite a stark picture that those five children that are on life support, and there are others, there have been others, they're the most serious of injuries. Those five should be out enjoying their summer holidays, but there aren't the same number of people in the hospital, thankfully, who've been injured driving tractors. And, you know, there's probably a different level of responsibility and skill sets and maybe a different way of being brought up on the farm, etc., that might make that not a direct comparison. Are e-scooters not more environmentally friendly? They are. You can start getting into the batteries, though, and the charging of them, but they are, of course. What about tax and insurance on these scooters? Same as our cars. No word of that. Oshin says, great move with new regulations. It still doesn't address wastage that could be used for proper infrastructure like roads and proper greenways. In relation to electric bikes, in electric bikes, there are illegal ones capable of 100 kilometres per hour in this country. Listen, even the scooters with the limits on, it's like rotate the accelerator, triple tap on the brake and, you know, click your heels together and it takes the limiter off a lot of them anyway. That's not actually how you do it, but It's a digital limiter, and there are numerous videos out there as to how you can circumvent those limits. Bernie is with me now. Bernie, thanks for joining me. How are you keeping?
Not so bad, Greg. How's yourself?
I'm doing good. Now, there's a bit of a black spot for road traffic collisions, and unfortunately, Bernie, it happens to be right at your house. So this is outside Ancranog in Derrybeg. Am I right in saying?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, what's...
on the Wild Atlantic Way.
Wild indeed. What have you had to endure?
Well, we weren't at the house at the time, but a neighbour contacted us yesterday morning and sent a picture of a garden wall, half a garden wall lying in her garden. But we don't know who it was. The car wasn't there at that time.
Yeah, you've had the house now for 8 years, and it's obviously this wall, you could tell it's been struck before.
Yes, you could tell, yeah, that section of the wall like had been replaced before, yeah. Mm. And the wall opposite, the house opposite us, their wall was hit not so long ago as well.
And what do you think is happening? Is there a turn off next to your house, or why is it being hit so much?
But I think it's just the speed that some of the cars go on that road, like.
And
there is a junction, and it's like a slight bend, but it seems that they just come too fast, like, and then just lost control on the bend.
Yeah. Now, what happened here? And the guards are quick to point out whoever hit your wall left the scene of a road traffic collision, which you know can lead to quite a severe penalty. Mm.
Yeah, we were hoping that they would come and contact us like and sort it out.
Mm.
But as yet, we haven't had any.
And I suppose, is that part of our conversation today? Maybe you're appealing to their better judgment and say, look, if you struck this wall, you know, you have fled the scene of a collision, far better to come forward now and make reparation.
And just fix the wall, like, yeah, it was.
Yeah, but in terms
accidents
of
happen, you know, but like yeah.
Yeah, but Bernie, they happen all too often here, and you're saying, and your neighbours are saying, something needs to be done to slow the traffic down in that area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is scary sometimes the speed that some, even during the day, like at some vehicles go on that road.
And of course, now you face the cost. We're looking at images
across. You have to. Sorry.
No, go on. How do you?
Sorry, Greg. I was just saying, even like trying to cross the road as well, like, because we have a wee dog and we like walk up the wee lane opposite, like, and sometimes trying to get across that road, like, you take your life in your hands.
Well, you do, and I notice a wee entrance just beside where the wall was struck as well, so you could go down the route of saying, you know, thankfully you were away at the time and you weren't heading out to walk the dog, because God knows what could have happened.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Or if the wee dog was behind the wall.
Yeah. That's it, or a kid. Yeah, I get you. Mm-hmm. All right, Bernie. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll find out from the council if they've any concerns in relation to this stretch of road, any plans to try and... I'm not sure if it's part of the new, you might be aware, or maybe you're not, Bernie. There is a current revision of speed limits in certain areas. I'm not sure if this road, I don't know, do you know if it's going to be subject to a reduction in speed? But I suppose it's about enforcement too, isn't it?
And that we don't know what they would really would need to, like, do something or put a camera up, like, to catch people that are going too fast. Yeah. Would be a deterrent.
All right, Bernie, listen, thank you for that. I appreciate your time. A caller says, good morning, Greg. You are up for Iran or you really hate America. Anyone can see that. Remind me, Greg, does Iran own the Strait? Yes or no? No is the answer. They are bombing neighbouring Muslim countries and they do nothing in return. But talk shows, even when being bombed by Iran, they stick with the Muslim brothers in Iran. No, and I really did stick in the caveat at the time, and I really don't want to be defensive because I know in my mind where I'm at. I said when I was making the comments that I was viewing this detached from the politics of it, to be honest with you. Whether or not the Iranians actually own the Strait of Hormuz, the Americans are negotiating with them to get passage for ships through it. So what does that say to you? Secondly, whether they own it or not, they have control of it. And thirdly, my point was, how is America going to, in their actions right now, how is America going to achieve their goals? What were their goals? What are their goals right now? What does a victory look at? I was looking at it dispassionately, to be honest with you, and I shouldn't because, you know, school children were blown to pieces in Iran who have nothing to do with the leadership of that. We should be focused on that. But I was actually looking at it really quite dispassionately, and I was thinking of petrol, diesel and home heating oil for hard-pressed struggling families in Ireland. And my commentary was, how does this end? You know, what does an end look like? And I can't see an end now. Whether that is, do you know what? In this case, I will say it. I think the Americans made a really big mistake. And I think Americans know that Trump made a mistake. And I think, to be honest with you, that and J.D. Vance has the vice president of the United States. He said he was against this invasion. And he has also suggested that maybe there are elements of politics in Israel that have too much influence. These are all words out of the vice president's mouth, not some baldy Egypt in Donegal on the radio. So that's it. Now, if you can determine from that I'm anti-American or pro-Iran, I certainly am not anti-American because American people are some of the best people in the world. Am I anti the Trump administration in this decision? Yeah, because look at the impact it's having on everyone else. A silly decision. The vice president didn't want it, and there's no way out of it. So I'd love to have a chat with you on air if you want to. It's not something I'm terribly knowledgeable about, but I want everyone to feel that their voices are heard. On the issue of laws that are in existence already should be enforced, such as parking on footpaths and double yellow lines. We need to enforce the law in existence before we enforce new ones. You see, what really happens is that you introduce... So say, for instance, when they introduce a ban of under 18s on scooters, and they will... The majority of people, the absolute majority of people will go, right, sorry, son, sorry, daughter, you can't use your scooter on the road. It's illegal now and we don't want you getting in trouble. So instantly, as soon as you bring in a law, the overwhelming majority of people adhere to it straight away. You don't have to enforce it. They will just say, right, I know the difference between right and wrong. That's wrong now. So you remove those people off the road. And then what you're left with is the people that flout the law. And then you police them, right? Whereas now... You have to please everybody. So, you know, like that's what goes on. There is a certain level of compliance and you could go through every law in history to see how that works. So you get the compliant people to stop doing it, which the majority are, the overwhelming majority are, and then you use your limited resources then to enforce on those that choose to ignore laws. The majority of people won't park on a footpath. The majority of people won't abuse a disabled bay because they... adhere to the law that's in place. And that's what they're doing with the scooters. Wait and see. Hi there. Can you make listeners aware of the dumpling squishy toy My wee girl's busted in her hand today. She only got it on Friday. The stuff inside has completely covered her face, which was traumatic enough. She ended up in casualty, having to get her eyes rinsed, and it's an ointment cream. I would not advise any child to purchase these toys. So, again, I don't have children of the age anymore that would be playing with this, but are you familiar with the dumpling squishy toy? This listener says, be careful. She ended up in hospital getting her child's eyes rinsed. Louise, thanks for that. Hi, Greg. Sorry for the message. It's fine. In a bit of a pickle and wondering if you can help, wondering if any of your listeners could help me find a bee expert. Have had bees take up residence in the cavity of the wall of our rented accommodation. Our landlord attempted to fix, but we still have a number of bees turning up in the bathroom every day. Just wondering, does anyone out there have any beekeepers or pest removal experts that could help us out? Currently unable to stay in the house. They are literally evicted from the house by bees. There's a huge bee population. There's a huge population of people out there that keep bees, and you know what, if they are the right types of bee, they're actually quite valuable. So what you're going to have to do, Matthew, is get back in touch with me and tell me where you are, because there's no point a beekeeper in Bundoran finding out that you live in Mallon. So get back in touch, let us know where you are, and I wouldn't be surprised if we could get you sorted today and get you back in your accommodation. Let's get to some comments coming in the first hours. Hi, Greg. Reece, Scooter, Ban, etc. How come the parents of all these underage criminals are not being held accountable by the courts for their children? What has happened to accountability in this country? No wonder there's no respect for the law. I don't think that really happens. It's talked about a lot. But in any case, the minister literally referenced this, and he said that, you know, these are being bought with a view to holding parents responsible. He quite literally said that, or words to that effect. Maybe high-vis helmets should be part of the registration so that cyclists and scooter users have no excuse. Plus, it will give Gardaí an idea if the user is licensed to use the vehicle. When in Dublin, I saw tons of scooters, but when in Glasgow, maybe one or two. I wonder what the difference in registration laws and enforcement is. Well, high-vis and helmets is, they're going, so in other words, if after these laws are enacted, if I cycle through Letterkenny without a high-vis on or a helmet, the guards can stop me instantly and fine me. So that's the whole idea of it. It wouldn't be like, you know, oh, it's advisable that you wear a high-vis. It's part of cycling. Sorry, it's part of scooting. So I think that's what you're talking about. And in case you missed it, that is actually included or will be included. A person involved in a collision with a tractor doesn't usually get to ICU. They'll go direct to the morgue. I don't hear many instances of tractors being involved in fatal collisions, to be honest with you. If I'm missing that, please point me in that direction. But what we are talking about is five under 18s currently on life support in the Children's Hospital in Dublin. But as I say, if there is a spate of tractor collisions, or you know of many that are happening, please let me know and we can chase that up. Feel like a license could sort the e-scooter crack out. I think a good rule of thumb is if it can damage or do damage to someone, you should probably have a license of some kind to operate it. Push bikes then. Electric bikes. You have to include them in that, surely. Three children stabbed in Dublin and there's no urgency for knife law to be brought in. There is a ton of knife laws already in there. I think really maybe what you're talking about is enforcement. We talked of a dramatic increase in knife crimes yesterday on the programme. I don't know if you heard it. A big increase in people being treated for stab wounds. Greg, do people have no understanding of phone etiquette in public? I was in the ED department recently and I can understand that children and adults get bored with the long wait, but recently I was beside a grown adult who played his phone on loud the entire time. The dad of a young boy beside him asked him to either turn it down or put on headphones as there's a lot of sick people in the area. He totally ignored him and continued on. Yeah, what about phone etiquette? I was in getting an NCT recently and had quite a long wait, 50 odd minutes, something along those lines. And there was a guy watching an episode on Netflix beside me. And, you know, maybe when he's watching it and he's looking at the lips move and he's locked in, it sounded all right. But it was this tinny, tinny, high-pitched noise driving me absolutely nuts. Not to the point where I'd had said anything. But, you know, have you an issue with phone etiquette? Do we see that a lot now? You know, people listening to their phone loud in public? Let me know. 086 60 25,000. We were talking about road safety in the west of the county. Let's head further east and go to Convoy and say hello to Margaret McIlwain. Good morning, Margaret.
Morning, Greg.
Right, you live in the Tollydonnell Convoy area, and yeah. There's a particularly dangerous stretch of road. Tell us about it.
Well, I live on a very bad corner, and there's a crash barrier right around my house. If you ever pass, you'll see it. And this last month, 6 weeks, there have been 7 accidents on that road, on that corner, and the month before there were 6. Now, they've hit the crash barrier again, and the poles are down about 6 feet onto the ground, and they have to come from Tipperary or somewhere like that to put in new poles. I have fought for more signs. I think they're granted, but we need rumble strips because it's the only thing that'll slow the people down.
There are a couple of nursing homes and other obviously people living in that area.
Yeah, down below me as well.
Quite busy then, I take it.
Yeah.
And what
it's
do
a very busy road.
What do you think is happening, Margaret, that so many people are leaving the road and hitting your wall or hitting these...
Well, they're going too hard for a kick-off kit, Greg.
Yeah.
Definitely going too hard. And as you come up to my house, there's a wee side road and it was squared with the main road.
Mm.
And the people, before they even look, they're down at my bottom gate, turning and going back again. Because it's the wrong road to go to Letterkenny. But they think it's the main road. And it's up to the council. I mean, there is a couple of councillors fighting very hard for me.
Yes.
But they've done nothing about it yet. I suppose they have to wait for the council to give them out the money.
Yeah, well, maybe get on to the council directly yourself. You know, I mean, harm to the councillors.
They're sick looking at me.
The first signs you've got over the line, what is it like, slow down, dangerous bend ahead, or signs saying Letterkenny this way or that way, or what?
They put down signs, slow. And I had them for 2 years and they come in, they tired over the top of them and they've never done nothing about it. There's not even a sign on the road.
On the road, the paint on the road, that's gone.
And the crash barrier is not gold, black and gold anymore. It's just silver.
Out of interest, you know when there was the slow on the road, did you see any reduction in collisions? Did it have any material effect, I wonder?
Well, we didn't have as much, not as much okay. of people hitting the hedge. But it's all young ones that's hitting the hedge.
Mm, yeah.
You know.
Realistically.
I have grandchildren here.
Yeah, okay, and you're worried about them.
And I have a wee dog, and he goes out on the road, and someday it's either going to be the dog or the kid's going to get killed.
God forbid. Do you think, realistically, you'll ever get rumble strips there, though? I don't know the makeup of the road, Margaret.
Oh, don't you dare. Don't you think about it, Greg. I'll fight till I get them.
Right, okay.
For I had a son was killed, too, I'm telling you, I am not going to lie down to this.
Wow, that's actually really sad and interesting, Margaret. This is really as much about your son then as it is about, you know, in
no,
other
no,
words...
No, my son was killed in a different area.
No, but my point is... My point is, and I think you were going to say...
I wouldn't want anybody else's son killed at my corner.
Exactly, that's it. So it's about preventing another mum having to go through what you've went through. Yeah, I get it.
Exactly, that's what I'm going through.
Okay, yeah. Right.
It's not about me, it's about the rest and something's going to have to be done.
Right, so at the moment you're waiting on road painting and physical signs, Margaret, is that right?
No, just signs for the hedge, not for the road.
Right, okay. Right, Margaret, we'll...
They haven't given up on that yet.
Well, the one thing I know is that if they've committed them to you, that they will happen. Let's just hope that someone from the council's listening and they can get this over the line because you're doing this for all the right reasons, obviously to protect your own grandchildren, but also to hopefully prevent someone else going through the awful loss that you've been through. Okay. Right, Caroline's going to get on to the council as well to see if we can have any swinging relations to that, Margaret. And also, too, it might stop you ringing them for 5 minutes.
Well, Mr. Ward would probably be in the dial the day, but once I contact him, he comes down if I have any problems.
Right.
And he does fight for my corner now.
Okay, well, let's see if we can get these signs up sooner rather than later. Thanks, Margaret.
Thank you. They're going to go now on their holiday now this weekend, and there'll be no signs up.
Well, the signs could be sitting in the Arden Lifford. Let's see. We'll not give up hope. Let's see what we
can
do.
Be.
Look, we'll see what we can do. All right,
okay,
Margaret.
Right, thank you.
Right, okay, that's Margaret in Tonley Donald Convoy. I would love if we could, before the end of the week, say that Margaret got her signs, especially given the fact that she's lost her own son from the sounds of it to a road traffic collision and wants to prevent any other family having to go through that. The wall's been hit 7 times in the last 6 weeks. The month before it was 5 times. So that's 12 collisions. Let's get those signs up if they're there, because by the sounds of it, they've all already been approved. Quick one before the break. Greg, it's fabulous that we've had this great weather lately, but it means we're outside in the grass more and doing long walks in different areas. Please ask your listeners to be mindful of ticks and check everyone as soon as you get home. As someone with Lyme disease, I wouldn't wish it on anyone. It is... And there's so many people out there that are living with Lyme disease. And, you know, they're from pillar to post through the medical system trying to get some resolution. Maybe it's got a little bit easier now to get on the antibiotics that you need as soon as you need them. But just keep an eye out for any ticks. It's really important if you do get a tick bite that you keep an eye out for that reddening. It's like a red circle that can appear around it. But that's not always present. So if you pull a tick out and you notice any change on the skin, a red ring, particularly around the tick bite, or any disimprovement in how people might feel, trust me, get them to a GP and tell them what happened and try and get antibiotics as soon as you can, because otherwise you or they could end up with a lifelong condition that can be incredibly, incredibly debilitating.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, monitoring homes and businesses in the Northwest for intruder, fire, panic and medical signals. Call Sheridan Security on 91-26025.
Okay, this Tuesday, the 21st of July, it's time for Community Garda information, and our guest this week from Letterkenny Garda Station is Garda Gerard McNamee. Good morning to you. Thank
Good
you
morning,
so much
Greg.
For joining us. I
Good
really
morning.
Appreciate it. Right, let's get straight into it and start with an appeal in relation to a burglary in Trenta.
Yes, Greg. Gardaí are appealing for the assistance of the public in connection with a burglary that occurred in the area of Soccer, Trenta, on Thursday the 16th of July at approximately 11:20 a.m. A resident of a house was in that area was downstairs when she heard an unlocked door into the house being opened, and she also heard footsteps. She ran upstairs to alert her family members. When they came downstairs, the intruder had left the house. Nothing was stolen from within the house and no damage was caused. We appeal to anyone in that area who may have observed any type of suspicious activity, people or vehicles, in that area that morning to alert Gardaí in Milford on 074-91-53060. And Gardaí, Greg, are appealing to people to check over their security features which they have in their homes, and they can contact Sergeant McGrory at Letterkenny Garda Station, the Divisional Crime Prevention Officer, at any time.
All right, if you were in Trenta last Thursday, just after 11 o'clock in the morning, and I presume that person or persons would have been seen leaving there with a bit of urgency, or may not, but just if you have any information, as you heard from Jared there, get it to the Gardaí. A road traffic collision in Churchill being investigated too?
Yes, Greg. Gardaí are investigating a single vehicle road traffic collision involving a white Audi that occurred at Tully, Churchill, on the Churchill to Garton Road at the Lennon Bridge on Tuesday the 14th of July at approximately 2:25 a.m. The Audi appears to have collided with a ditch and was on its roof. Nobody was present at the scene upon the arrival of Gardaí. If anyone witnessed the collision, we ask them to get in touch with Gardaí in Milford on 074-915-3060. We have appealed to any motorists who have travelled in that area between 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. with the dash cam to make that footage available to us.
Right, another incident being investigated, a road traffic collision, that is, in Castle Finn, this the next day.
Yes, we are appealing for witnesses to a collision involving two vehicles that occurred on the Knock Roar, Castle Finn, on Wednesday the 15th of July at approximately 10 a.m. A white Audi was parked along the roadside at that location when it was struck from behind by a white Peugeot Partner van, which is believed to have been travelling in the direction of Castle Finn at that time. The driver of the van did not remain at the scene, and again, we appeal to anyone who may have travelled in that area with dashcam between 9:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. on that date to make the footage available to us. Any relevant information should be passed on to Gardaí at the Ballyshannon Garda Station on 071 985 8530.
Now, a two-vehicle collision in Milford last Sunday afternoon being investigated.
Yes, Greg. Again, Gardaí are investigating a road traffic collision involving two vehicles that occurred at Terholman, Milford, on the R246 on Sunday the 19th of July at approximately 4:50pm. The passengers of one of the vehicles was taken to Letterkenny University Hospital to receive treatment for non-life-threatening injuries. And again, we appeal to anyone who may have witnessed the collision or may have dashcam footage from that area to get in contact with Gardaí in Milford on 074 915 3060.
Just in relation to the dashcam footage, Jared, I've been contacted by people in the past, and I've raised it with your colleagues, by the way, and sometimes they're concerned that the footage in some way can incriminate them, whether the you know, how, you know, maybe it's picking up music in the car or conversation, or you know, maybe they might think that the footage is catching them speeding or something. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, I'm not talking about them in the act of a robbery or anything like that there. But when the appeal is there for this type of footage, the focus is on what's being filmed.
The focus on which the complaint has been made about, Greg, whatever statement's been given, that specific incident has been investigated, Greg.
Yeah, just for people's own reassurance. Yeah. And the Gardaí take the footage off the camera for you and everything if that suits you. Right, just a couple of questions, if that's okay. Could I ask Garda McNamee, what is the law in regards to people recording themselves while driving for social media? So we've all seen these images. They're clearly driving. Sometimes it's in a holder. Other times you can see they're holding the phone. I don't know what the difference is, but what's the story there?
Yes, Greg. Well, it is strictly illegal to hold a mobile phone in your hand or to support a mobile phone with any part of your body while driving a vehicle. You can legally speak on your phone using integrated Bluetooth or hands-free systems. You must trigger or answer calls using the voice commands or the steering wheel buttons. If anyone wishes to report a manner of driving which they believe to be dangerous or careless, then they can, and the matter will be investigated, Greg.
Yeah, indeed. And is there various ways that you can report these types of instances? Or
yes, so if anyone wants to report an incident relating to road safety, which is not an emergency, you can use the Traffic Watch app online as a reporting method. If a member of the public believes that someone is driving in a careless or dangerous manner at that moment in time, then they should contact Gardaí directly, immediately, and an emergency call 999 or 112, Greg.
And separately, you know, if someone is not holding the phone or is not operating the phone with the hand, I think if you're doing a piece to camera, as we call it in the media, you are going to be distracted, you know, and I think people might think on about that. You know, whether or not it is a reportable offence, I don't know. But, you know, can you really be fully concentrated on what's going on around you whilst you are speaking into a phone driving? I mean, I would question that just so. Now, following an appeal on air about scams, I called the Garda station and was asked to drop in the phone number used. I went to Letterkenny to do this to be met by another guard who said there was no point in me bringing it in as they change the numbers on a regular basis. So which is it? Do you want these scam numbers or not?
The short answer to that question, Greg, is no. We do not need to be provided with scam callers' phone numbers, as there are hundreds of thousands of them in use. The only time that you will be asked to provide Gardaí with the number of a scam call you received is in the unfortunate event that you have fallen victim to the scam. We would then take the caller's number as part of your statement of complaint. Many of the numbers being used by scammers are fake or cloned numbers, Greg. Fraudsters are able to manipulate their actual caller ID method, which is known as spoofing, to display familiar numbers such as your bank or your government agency to trick you into revealing personal information or sending money. Therefore, the number has appeared on your screen is very often not the scammer's number at all.
As well, and of course, too, if someone starts engaging you in a Facebook scam or something, you know, whereby there's back and forward contact, obviously, then there are situations where the number would be useful. But as you say, 9 times out of 10, it's just a cloned number. Right, OK. Just on a positive note, a big thank you to the Gardaí Gwydor, who did a great job of traffic management at the Blessing of the Graves at the weekend. So there you go.
Thank you, Greg.
Think of a positive. Listen, thank you very much indeed, Garda Gerard McNamee from the Letterkenny Garda Station. Now, if you missed any of that, it'll be available on our podcast on our website from 11:30. And it also goes up later on our Facebook page and on Garda Síochána Facebook page if you want to watch back or catch up on any details. Or for some people, it's the first and it's the first time that they see it. And it's back live with you after 10 next Tuesday. Right, let's get some reaction from within Garda Síochána in relation to these proposed new changes to e-scooter laws. Under-18s will be banned from them. There are plans to make the wearing of a helmet and high-vis compulsory. Some form of registration. The minister's still not overly committing in relation to tax or insurance, but he wants them to be able to be sort of connected with an individual for enforcement. But what about enforcement? That's going to, of course, fall to Garda Síochána. And Garda Brendan O'Connor is the National Executive Representative of the Garda Representative Association in Donegal. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to your listeners.
Right, OK. So, I mean, on the face of it, you know, it was up to guards now to enforce. Whatever the government introduces, it'll fall to Gardaí again. You know, we'll get the text, the Gardaí are doing nothing about this, and so on and so forth. You know, the usual rhetoric, Brendan. Without additional resources, yeah, what kind of an impact do you think Gardaí can have in enforcing a whole new tranche of road traffic legislation?
Well, look, we don't want to be cynical, and we don't want to say it's going to fail, and anything that's aimed at protecting vulnerable road users and saving lives is welcome. But I mean, your listeners will be familiar with I mean, road traffic legislation, and if we take the context of Donegal, there's volumes of road traffic legislation on the books, but it's about policing the policeable. So, you know, if we have a Garda speed van in your local village, the law-abiding citizen will get a fine and probably pay it. But when they drive 100 yards up the road, they'll see black marks all over the road, might have been kept up half the night by someone with total disregard for the law. No fear of the guards coming along. If the guards happen to come along and do actually detect them, they may be actually disincentivized or instructed by a control room not to engage or not to follow. And, you know, that's where the problem lies. So the government, while they have to be seen to do something, I mean, in bringing in more legislation without having proper resourcing for the guards, proper training for the guards and proper backing for the guards is going to be fairly limitless. Mm. The people who are being targeted and need to be addressed are not people known for their regard for law or their social conscience.
In fairness to the minister, obviously your Garda commissioner was expressing those concerns at the meeting yesterday, because the minister we had on earlier, Brendan, and you may not have been able to hear that, he did reference specifically Gardaí not facing prosecution in the event of something happening in a pursuit, but also to additional training as to how you would, you know, safely pursue someone on an e-scooter. So at least, whether or not, and you say we don't want to be too cynical, right, so we'll take what we have at the moment, it is part of the conversation, and they recognise the fact that Gardaí are fearful of prosecution, but also that additional training might be needed.
Well, it's very welcome to hear. Well, first of all, the Garda Commissioner is acknowledging the level of the problem, which is good. If there's government ministers saying that is government policy, perhaps it needs to be communicated to all the arms of the state in relation to the management of criminal justice, because at the moment it would appear that Gardaí actually face a lower threshold for prosecution. And as the Commissioner said, there are 10 Gardaí currently before the courts who have become in those situations by trying to tackle people who offend and commit road traffic offences.
Mm. I presume, though, it's a little bit easier now, because there's three things instantly when Gardaí are on patrol. And we were told that this new way of doing business meant we'd see more patrols. And there's three simple things that will happen. A, are you wearing a helmet? B, are you wearing high-vis? And C, what age are you?
Yes, and those issues will be easy to address, say, with compliant law-abiding citizens or people who need to be educated to the regulations, because I suppose another dynamic in Donegal, and we've seen it in the last couple of weeks there with the heat wave and the number of people using the beaches and the traffic congestion, a lot of people are using these e-scooters who might be from outside the jurisdiction. So certainly, look, this is welcome legislation, and it's part of the piece of reducing the number of catastrophic injuries, and the statistics are quite startling as the number of, and particularly children who have been injured. So hopefully it will help educate parents, but whether it will address the wide-scale antisocial use of these scooters for criminality and for just antisocial behaviour, that's another debate. But yes, it will certainly, it's a piece in the jigsaw, and hopefully it will have some effect. And, you know, one life saved or a number of children spared life-changing injuries will certainly be welcome, and my members will be more than willing to play our part in achieving that. But again, we've very limited resources, very limited training, and the impact, it requires more than just legislation. That's what we're saying.
And I'll put it to the Minister that while we have the statute book open, is there an opportunity here to have bicycle drivers, cyclists, also having to wear high-vis, also having to wear helmets, also having to have their vehicle registered because there's light jumping and all that type of stuff? What's the Garda position in relation to that? Now, I do understand that this would be a whole other cohort of people, maybe, that Garda might be responsible for policing, or it might make it easier to do that as it is. Do you think there is a window of opportunity here to sort of address some motorists' concerns in relation to cyclists, be them, you know, pedal cyclists or electric cyclists?
Yes, well, the road is a shared space, and you know, everybody has an obligation and their part to play in road safety. And certainly, the feedback from a lot of motorists would be that they're over-regulated, and perhaps over there's more enforcement towards them. So certainly, you know, as I say, a review and a look at the entire situation and see what can we do to preserve people's safety and to encourage better behaviour among all road users is always welcome. So as I say, but I mean, common sense prevails, and the people. People who engage in risky behaviour, it's about attitudes. But again, a little bit of coercion and a little bit of persuasion is always good to have, especially from our own perspective, from an enforcement point of view. Sometimes, I mean, people are very challenging nowadays. You wish to speak to someone about just something like that, they will soon throw it back in your face that there's no legislation. So certainly, but again, if people aren't afraid of being killed, I don't know if they're going to be afraid of a stern word.
But as I said earlier on, Brendan, the overwhelming majority of people are compliant. They will follow the rules and regs. And that leaves those that aren't really for Garda to deal with, rather than, you know, trying to keep everyone safe and there's no rules to back it up.
Well, that's true, definitely. Yeah, okay. And I say the more people that are, the more rules that are in place, the more people that are compliant, does reduce the cohort of people that need to be spoken to and educated as well as enforcing. There's an education piece there.
Yeah, and also the minister referenced that. Okay, listen, thank you, Garda Brendan O'Connor, on the National Executive, and in fact, the National Executive Representative for the GRA here in County Donegal. Right, there was big conversations about opting in or opting out for organ donation system. It came in last year. In a way, I think, you know, it became political. It became a situation whereby, you know, this is the government trying to take over your bodies and all this type of stuff. And the conversation perhaps wasn't enough about the difference you can make to someone's life through organ donation. And as it turned out, 64,000 people either decided or were convinced to opt out of the new organ donation system. Colin White's National Advocacy Manager for the Irish Kidney Association, and he joins us now. Colin, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I suppose in terms of what impact this might have had, listen, it's possible those 64,000 people would never have given their organs, and the whole conversation about these new rules might encourage people to consider giving them. So is this a net loss, or do we not know yet?
I think it's important to take the figure in context. Like, if we look at it as a percentage of the population, it's about 1.2% of the population. And in the UK, they were a little bit ahead of us in introducing similar legislation, not the same, but similar. And Northern Ireland has an opt-out of 1.3%. And the other countries within the UK are 3, 4, 5% have opted out. So we're certainly kind of on the lower side of what's going on in our neighbours. And again, to put the figure of 64,000 in context, over 1.6 million people have indicated their support for organ donation on their driving license application. So I think if we're looking to gauge the sentiment of the public towards organ donation, I have to say it looks extremely positive.
Yeah, and indeed, and it's a good positive approach because it's true and it's backed up by the facts. All of that, though, whether someone has ticked their license or opted out, really, it does kind of all come down to having the conversation with the people that will make that decision in the family room of the emergency department or on a ward somewhere, because ultimately that's where the final decision is made. Is that a correct framing of it, Colin? And what do you want to say to that?
100%. I think this is part of the legislation that perhaps didn't get the coverage that it needed to when the legislation commenced last year. We heard all about the opt-out register, but the legislation is very clear that the role of the family remains as part of the process. It states very clearly that organ retrieval cannot go ahead if the family don't consent. So this is why the Irish Kidney Association, we've always had the organ donor card. We've always had the space on the organ donor card for your next of kin signature. And the purpose of that space was to start the conversation. So if your listeners go to ika.ie/donor card, request their donor card, we can send one out by post. They can download one to their digital wallet now if they wish. But it starts the conversation. It's not a typical dinner time conversation to have, but the organ donor card is there as that trigger, as that icebreaker to make it that little bit easier.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a morbid conversation, but what I would suggest is that people tell the partner, but tell the mum and dad as well. I mean, you don't want a situation where, and I'll just use the family room, I'm not saying that's where it's always decided, whereas in a very difficult situation, someone says, well, you know, Greg always said that he wanted to donate his organs, and, well, they're not taking parts of my son out of him. He's going to be, you know, like, and I don't want to be macabre or anything like that there, but that's everyday activity. And, you know, have the conversation with anyone you think's going to have an opinion on it.
100%. And it's like the donor card triggers that conversation. But if you get a donor card and bring it home, it's not only your wishes. It then triggers within the family. Like, this is where technology comes in great. How many of us have a family WhatsApp group? Stick it in the family WhatsApp group when you've downloaded the card to your digital wallet. And then everybody knows, and then everybody gets to express an opinion that, yes, equally, I would like to be a donor. But I think we also have to understand, you kind of alluded to it in your opening, that it's only about 1% of deaths every year are in the circumstances where organ donation is even a possibility. So this is a very rare opportunity, and it's a very precious gift. And I think we need to look at it from both sides. It's a gift for the recipients, and obviously their families as well benefit from it. But equally, it's a legacy to leave your own family. Like, if I was to generalize a comment I've heard from many donor families down through the years, it would be that it was the one bright light in a very dark time. Mm-hmm. We've lost a loved one, but there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe up to 7 families out there who are getting to enjoy another beautiful day, getting to mark another family milestone, whatever it might be. All those little gifts that make life so precious.
Yeah, 24 by 365. That's the amount of beautiful days that Shamie McDermott, I beg your pardon, from Ballybuffet, has been able to enjoy because of the generosity of someone almost a quarter of a century ago. Shamie. And I would say there's not a day that you don't think on the person that gave you the gift.
Hello?
Yes, Shamie. I was just saying that this is an incredible gift you received.
Yes, it's been so, lovely. Yeah, oh my God, and my donor family, on that night, you know, I just keep thinking on the night that they donated their loved one's organs. And there were 5 people. That young girl died. It saved. And I was one of them people who lived on the memory.
You received the donation of a kidney, which I presume sort of almost had an almost immediate positive impact on your health and your life, Shamie.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I came down with renal failure in 1987, October 1987, and I got my transplant in March, the 22nd of March 2002, and it's just been an unbelievable change in my life, right? Unbelievable, just unbelievable, yeah.
I loved how you referred to the donor family.
Sorry?
You referred to the donor family.
Yes, yes, yeah, yeah. The donor family. So I think of them every morning when before I get out of my bed, I wake up with a smile and I just think of my donor family and especially my lovely donor. It's just been an incredible turnaround. Before that, I was always from when I was born and out of hospitals all my life with issues with kidneys, and I came to a toll in 1987. It was kidneys that what happened, and right through that to 2002. And from that, I've never looked back. Thanks to my donor and my donor family, never. Right. My health has been just unbelievable.
Well, brilliant. Great. Continuing to enjoy it. Thank you, Shami. Colin White's with us still, of course, National Advocacy Manager for the Irish Kidney Association. You know, say, for instance, from, you know, the Irish Blood Service, we get these ongoing updates on sort of demand versus supply and the various things that can influence that. Is there a similar sort of a measure in terms of, you know, how many people might be waiting versus, you know, how many people actually choose to donate, that type of thing?
Yeah, we get figures released from the Organ Donation Transplant Ireland office in the HSE every year. And so we kind of get an indication that typically there's approximately 600 people awaiting an organ transplant at any one time. And last year, I think we had just over 200 transplants took place. But I think it's...
What percentage do we know? Sorry to put you in the spot, Colin. Talked of, you know, 1% of deaths potentially being, you know, qualify for organ donation. Do we know what percentage of that 1% do opt for donation?
This is something that's only very recently come into Ireland, where they have a potential organ donor audit.
So we haven't got the data yet, really.
But initial figures are kind of indicating somewhere around 60 to 70% consent rates.
Right. Okay. So
which again would sit fairly comparable with our international neighbours.
But my point is, if that could go up 10%, look at the amount of people that could have life-altering or life-saving donations.
Oh, it would be very significant. And again, I think if we look at our international partners, something that we can very much learn is the average age of an organ donor in Ireland is in the mid-40s, whereas the average age of an organ donor in Italy, for example, is 62.
Oh, okay. So there's a lot of positive indicators there, even in the midst of what we're talking about, obviously the loss of life, but it's the gift of life that comes from that too. If anyone wants further information, you can go to where, would you suggest, Colin?
Our own website, ika.ie, and if you want to get a donor card, just stick a /donor card on the end of that.
Lovely stuff. Thank you so much for your time. Declan Brennan's a court reporter with CC Nocton and joins us now. Good morning, Declan. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
Right. We learned and reported yesterday that a factory worker who choked and sexually assaulted a young woman down a dark alleyway has been jailed for 6 years. This is a crime that occurred in Donegal. Give us the background to the case.
Yes, so Mohammed Alam is an Algerian national. He's been living in Donegal since 2023. And on this night in October 2024, the victim, a young woman in her early 20s, had gone out it was a Friday night, she's gone out with her friends. She's not from the county, so it was actually one of the first weekend nights she had decided to stay out and go out with obviously what happened had tragic consequences. So she was out in a nightclub at around 2 a.m. she had decided she'd want to go home, but her friends wanted to stay on dancing for a little bit longer. At this point, footage shown after the fact shows her on the edge of the dance floor, somewhat staggering, and the accused man pulls her out onto the dance floor, and they dance for a little bit. Within 4 minutes of this meeting, footage from outside the nightclub shows them leaving and him bringing her into a nearby alleyway. Footage also shows her, again, being somewhat uneven on her feet, and he attempting to steady her before they go down this alleyway, at which point, well, half an hour later, he's seen emerging on his own. She has no recollection of this, except to remember being on cold concrete and having a man holding her neck and forcibly kissing her. She, after she emerged from the alleyway half an hour later, she was in a distraught state. She was in a disheveled state. Her clothes were awry. Her jeans had been ripped open. Her jeans, which were newly bought, the fastener had was removed, and it was actually found later by investigating police down the alleyway. And she contacted her friends and said that she'd been strangled. Her friends met her, and found that she was still somewhat breathless, and her lips were actually blue. And obviously they alerted authorities. Police arrived, and an investigation began.
How did they come to arrest Halam?
So good police work is the short answer there. They scoured the CCTV footage. This incident was in Letterkenny, and they were able to identify the defendant from the CCTV footage, and also then, of course, they were able to find pieces of evidence from the scene of the crime. They went to his home in Letterkenny and Robinson Hall, where he was residing for the previous year. He'd come to Ireland in 2023, and they found evidence that linked him to the crime there. They found blood on his clothes that was then identified as her blood, and he was also linked to her through DNA.
He initially denied it, but there seemed to be some... he called her a liar, didn't he? But there seems to be some confusion as to whether he still denies it. He remains adamant that it was consensual, but there seems to be... Was there some talk that was at odds with that?
Yeah, well, I suppose there's a timing here, to be fair. So, yes, as you point out, he when he was initially arrested, he said she's a liar. He made no comment during interviews. And, of course, he did take a trial where he pleaded not guilty to all the offences. He was found guilty. The jury rejected his version of events. In the last 2 months, he would have been, as per normal, assessed by the probation services. And as part of this assessment, an offender will give an account, their history, as it were, of the events. And this then account becomes part of the report that's given to the court. And Justice David Keane, having heard from his barrister that the defendant was accepting responsibility for the offences he was convicted of, Justice David Keane, who's a very forensic judge, pointed out that he'd searched the report for any indication of moral or criminal responsibility, and found actually what was in the report was pretty much closely akin to the opposite. He said in the report, and so this is what the defendant told the probation officer, again, about 6 to 8 weeks ago, that he was adamant that the injured party agreed to the sexual activity and that it was consensual. Now, just to finish this point, this was put to the barrister, Shane Costello, and Shane Costello said, yes, that's what he told the probation officer. That has changed now. He now accepts responsibility. He now says, yes, I did these things. And he did also say he was filled with remorse, and he doesn't know essentially what came over him.
Okay, thank you.
That's what his barrister said were his instructions.
Yeah, so he was sentenced to 7 years backdated with the final year suspended, which means for this crime, he could be out in 2031.
Yeah, so the maximum offence available to the court was 10 years. And the court has to work within that limit that's set down by the legislation. It's a sexual assault. So the maximum is 10 years. And essentially then he set a marker within those 10 years of 8 years. He reduced it by 1 year because of this acknowledgement that's been set down. So that's a public acknowledgement that he did this, whether or not we question that or not, he's now said it. And that is deemed by the courts to be of some use. The judge said, just to say, that he was very much taking into consideration the impact of these crimes on the victim. And it's important that I think we allude to that she had said the impact of this attack has been devastating and continues to affect every part of our life. And the recovery process was painful and emotionally challenging, as we can imagine.
Yep, Declan, thank you for that. Declan Brennan, court reporter with CCC Newark. That's where we have to leave it on the show today. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.